is White Sox Weekly.
Line drive deep center. Got a chance. It's off for Taylor Harmon. Turn on the fireworks.
Anderson drives one into right center field. Heading back now is Cabe, turning and watching, and it's gone into right center.
The Chicago Baseball Conversation.
This ball's getting small.
On the flagship home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
High fly ball to left. This could be trouble. Eloy comes in, slides, and makes the catch. What a play. Swing and a miss. Strike three. Great changeup right there from Giolito, his seventh strikeout.
That's impressive. Huge, huge turnaround. You know, we're hoping and expecting that maybe this is the guy that everybody was, you know, expecting.
Let's begin.
Wow, getting a new open as we roll into September. Thank you, Chris Duffy. You can hear Annie Mazur getting a little love on the open. You too, Lucas Giolito, who is on the mound today. White Sox trying to end a five-game slide. Rough one yesterday for Ronaldo Lopez, who has been great in the second half, but that is starting to trend the other way right now, as Lopi did not get out of the first inning last night, which is not good. But the velocity's there. I don't think he's hurt, but you know, not certainly not the outing that he wanted to have. And three of his last four really have not been great. He allowed five against the Angels back on the 15th and seven against the Twins on the 20th. So we'll see if Ronaldo can find it again as we move into September. One guy who has found it, of course, is Lucas Giolito. He could, I don't even know if he needs to pitch anymore the rest of the year to be the comeback player of the year. I mean, Lucas Giolito, last year, worst ERA in baseball, coming into today, 14-7 with a 3.20. You know, what can you say about Lucas Giolito this year? He ranks among the American League leaders in basically everything. Complete games, he's tied for first with three. Shutouts, he's tied for first, he's got two. Batting average of the opponents, he's third. They're hitting .208 against him. OPS, on-base plus slugging, fourth, .642. League average is closer to 800. I mean, well down from there. ERA is, he's fifth with 3.2 for you old school people like myself. Wins for you older school people like myself, he's tied for fifth with 14. And strikeouts per nine, he's fifth in all in baseball at 11. The American League, I should say, at 11.59, 11.5 per game. And strikeouts at 203. So he's closing in on Javi Vasquez. For the most for White Sox all the way back to 2007, and we'll see how Lucas can do today. And it is just worth reminding, last year he finished with that ERA of 6.13. So right now, let's do the math on that. His improvement is 2.93. That would be the second best in the history of baseball, behind a gentleman by the name of Dick Ellsworth, who you may remember, who pitched for the Cubs in the 60s. 1962 and 1963. From 62 to 63, he improved by 2.98 runs. So Lucas is at 2.93. I think we can all do the math on that. That's .05. So he pitches just a little bit better than perhaps he could have the greatest change in ERA in 1 year. Now, that's, you know, not a stat necessarily you want, because you don't want to have the bad year, but once you do have the bad year, you do want to move forward, correct? And that is exactly what Lucas Giolito is doing. We got a busy White Sox Weekly for you today. Coming up this hour, one of my favorite people, Tom Pachorek, all class, always interesting to talk to. And Tom, of course, sitting in on the broadcast this week, last couple of nights, I should say. Jason Benetti off doing college football. Benetti is back today. But Tom was doing a great job alongside Steve Stone. Stoney stepping into the play-by-play on the TV side. I thought he did a great job, and those two had instant chemistry. And the Whipperoo is just always awesome to talk to. So we'll talk about the team. We'll talk about his journey. You may not know about Tom Pachorek. He's one of five, and his three brothers all ended up playing in the big leagues. Now, one of them only made it for one game and then had to have back surgery. He got three hits in his only game. It's almost like, you know, Field of Dreams, Moonlight Graham movie, right? Movie-like, right? I mean, you played one game in the big leagues. You got three hits. You proved that you could be there. And then, let me ask this question. Whoa. That's coming up. Don't worry. That's me from another thing. Let me pull that pot down for you there, Sammy. No problem. That's not a story you hear every single day. So that's some talented parents. And Tom also he played football in college as well as baseball at Houston. He was drafted in the 9th round into the NFL. I mean, what an athlete, right? And the Whimper is just always in a great mood, so we're looking forward to talking to him. And then, coming up after 2 o'clock today, Michael Huff will be with us, the White Sox director of youth baseball and fast pitch. Michael is moving into the fall season, but a lot of information on your travel teams and everything you can be doing to help your kid perhaps continue his baseball into the winter. So we'll be doing that coming up after 2 o'clock. And, of course, we'll talk about the team as well. And then Scott Merkin, our buddy from MLB.com, will be with us at 2:35. White Sox fans, celebrate Hispanic Heritage Night on Friday, September the 6th. It's presented by Cerveza Modelo. There'll be Latin music and dancing, special activities, an on-field parade, and post-game fireworks show as well. Modelo Especial. Come for the diamond, stay for the gold. Tickets start as low as $10. You can purchase that by visiting whitesox.com/NHH. I want to give some love to Tim and Bria Anderson as we start the show. Tim Anderson has been great on the field. A little shaky at shortstop as of late, but the fielding will come back up, I'm confident. But Tim and his wife, Bria, have been doing incredible stuff off the field. And they both took some students from the Chicago-based Youth Guidance Becoming a Man and Working on Womanhood programs. Now, so you got young kids who Tim and Bria are trying to expose to the world, and they take this group down to Atlanta, where the White Sox are playing this weekend, and they go on a tour of the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. Now, how awesome is that? This is not in the off season. The White Sox are playing games right now, and they're taking their time. And you know, in addition to the stress of playing baseball and producing at the highest level, hey, you know, we want to take these kids down here and we want to expose them to something that they would not be exposed to. And so they learning about the history of Atlanta. They go to the game, you know, and they're being mentored by incredibly successful people. And Tim's quote was, quote, some of these kids have never really been out of Chicago. It was, quote, dope to bring them to Atlanta and let them go check out the museum and learn about our history. I think that kind of stuff is important. Yes, that kind of stuff is extremely important. And it's extremely cool that Tim has taken the time to do that, along with his wife, who I've met at some of the Sox outings, whose Bria is just awesome. So, and if you're on the old Twitter, you can go to @SoxCharities, and there's just pictures of the group down on the field at the game, and then at the museum, and just a wide range, boys, girls, they all seem to be, I'm assuming these are all basically high school kids, but just super cool that they care, and not only, not just words, it's actions here. I mean, there they are, bringing kids down to Atlanta. White Sox Charities is awesome doing this as well. That's not cheap, right? You're flying everybody down. They're staying in a hotel. They're eating. They're going to the museum. It's a really, really cool thing that's going on. Hey, Sox fans, you can sample beers from over 40 local breweries while enjoying food, games, and entertainment in the park at the inaugural Shy Sox Craft Beer Fest. That's Saturday, September 14th. All attendees will take home a custom Shy Sox tasting glass. You do have to be 21 and over. Tickets on sale now at whitesox.com/beerfest. Take a quick time out. Come on back. And the Whimperoo, Tom Pachorek, will be with us. I think you'll enjoy the conversation. That is next on White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. 720 WGN, White Sox Weekly. And I think you've heard him this weekend. If you've been watching the TV, you certainly have. Tom Pachorek, the Whimperoo, back in the booth. Jason Benetti doing some college football. So alongside Steve Stone, you're both color guys here, Whimperoo. This is
so, we faked it.
I think it's
yesterday, Mark.
I got to tell you, I think Stoney's done a pretty good job at play by play. You guys sound
I think
yeah.
I think Stoney did a marvelous job of carrying me.
No. You do not need to be carried, sir. I'm not going to allow that.
Well, thanks, Mark. No, it was a lot of fun last night. Unfortunately, the results weren't too good. But, you know, the Sox are a good young team, but they just don't quite have the firepower right now that, say, the Atlanta Braves have. You know, they've got some good young players, too, but they're just a little bit outnumbered by the quality that the Braves are featuring right now. It's really a remarkable team that they're featuring here in Atlanta. You know, they're 28 games over 500, and they've done it with some masterminding trades by Alex Andropoulos, the general manager, and Brian Snitker has really done a nice job of managing the guys that he's gotten.
And they've locked in a lot of their young players, too, which I think is, you know, part of the White Sox plan here coming up. It'll be interesting in the offseason. But you're living in Atlanta, right, Tom?
Yes, I do. Just outside of Atlanta, about 70 miles.
Yeah, so do you see any parallels between what the Braves are doing and what the White Sox are trying to do?
Yeah, trying to go young. And, you mentioned the fact they locked up two of their young stars, Acuna and Ozzie Albies, the Braves did, which was a real smart move because these guys are going to be superstars. And so is Eloy Jimenez for the Sox being locked up. I think that's a trend that teams are going to go to right now, Mark, because of the fact that when you know a guy's going to be a star, you're positive and there's no backing off on it and you commit to him. I think it's a good move. I think it's a win-win situation. Because you control the guy for a lot longer and in his career, but at the same time, the player is getting a huge amount of salary in circumstances where they wouldn't have gotten otherwise.
Do you think that from a player's perspective that they're under control for too long, Tom? Do you think it's borderline unfair to the player?
No. I think when I played, I thought that was unfair. But these guys nowadays, I think I treated very, very well. You know, the minimum salary is over $500,000. So, and you get a nice meal money. You get three gourmet meals every day. You fly on charter flights. Your health coverage is taken care of. No, I don't think so. And you just, I think the situation is great for players right now. And if they can get themselves a multi-year contract, all the better for them. But at the same time, you have to give the owners a little bit of credit, too.
Yes, but I don't. It's compared, I guess, to other sports, and you did play in the wrong era. Went Peru. I mean,
I get it. I know.
At least for the. I mean, it was an awesome era, but you would be making a couple more dollars if you played it. What'd you make as a rookie?
As a rookie, I was with the Dodgers. I think I made $7,000 or $8,000.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. Oh no. Back then, I signed in 1968, and the most you could make as a rookie was $500 a month. That was the maximum.
Yeah, okay, but you're talking how about a rookie in the majors? You're talking in the minor leagues, correct?
Oh, okay, that was the minor leagues. Oh, sure, yeah, there was no minimum salary back then.
Okay.
So anytime the minimum salary went up back then, I got a raise. But no, there were times, I made more money in the Dominican Republic playing winter ball than I did my first year with the Dodgers in the big leagues.
Oh, my God.
Of course, you know that ticket prices, I remember the top price. The best seat at Dodger Stadium was $7 back then, back in 1973. So times have really changed from a marketing standpoint, and, of course, the cost of putting the game on is really gotten huge.
Yeah. I remember as a kid, you're making me think like my family used to take me to a bunch of Bulls games, and we had one family friend. They're like, "Can you believe how expensive these seats are?" And they were second row behind the visitor's bench. $18 a ticket?
Isn't that amazing? It's incredible. You know, you look at Yankee Stadium, aren't they charging like $2,500?
Yeah, it's disgusting.
It's just ridiculous. So I don't understand the game as well as I used to, but I'm trying to figure things out, Mark.
Yeah,
not that easy.
And just a reminder, by the way, White Sox fans, you can still go to Guaranteed Rate Field on a Sunday for $5 and sit in the upper deck, $10 for parking. That is a steal. So
that is a great deal.
Yeah. What's the most you ever made in a season, Tom? Not to get too personal here. Was it your last one with the Rangers?
The only time I ever approached halfway to the minimum of today was when I was playing for the White Sox.
Okay.
And I had a 4-year contract. It was right around $1 million. And God, I thought I was living in high cotton. And and I was really grateful for that. But, you know, like I said, times have really changed. And, you know, the players union is very, very strong. It's the best. It's the strongest union in sports. You know, you say that the player might be held on to too long by the ownership. But if you look at the benefits that Major League Baseball has compared to basketball and football, and you'll see that there's a huge difference. I'll give you an example. My good friend Ron Reed played 20 years in the major league, great pitcher for a number of teams, but he also was an All-American basketball player at Notre Dame, and he played 6 years in the NBA. And when he got time for retirement, he requested his retirement, and they gave him like a $10,000, and that was it
for
his time in the NBA. So, the union strength, I think, is much more powerful. And, you know, you guys like Marvin Miller that set the standard back in the 70s has made it possible for baseball players to really live a nice life now. And, you know, the guaranteed contract, too, is much more prevalent in baseball than it is, say, in football or any of the other sports.
And one would argue that you need it more in football than anything else because, you know, obviously the risk, right?
Absolutely. The risk of concussion and career-ending injury is so much more great in football than it is in baseball. So, no, you know, I had an opportunity, believe it or not, to play pro football, and thank God I turned it down. The Miami Dolphins made me an offer I could refuse.
I was actually going to bring that up today, Tom, because it's interesting to me in today's world of sports, especially with how kids are being brought up and parents in specialization. I mean, you played baseball and football at Houston. You were a ninth round pick in the NFL, and of course, you chose to play baseball. And as you just said, you know, I guess wisely so. But I'm just curious, like, you know, how did you balance playing both? And then, like, if I got some, you know, Michael Huff's on the show today, he does the, you know, White Sox camps. Like, if you're talking to parents right now, what do you say as far as like being your best in one when it's so competitive?
Well, it really is tougher to play more than one sport now, Mark. But I think, you know, back then when I went to the University of Houston, Coach Yeoman, Bill Yeoman, was the football coach there. And, he said that if you could start on the baseball team, you don't have to go through spring football, which was called Camp Fun, which was like being in hell. So our whole team, football team, went out for the baseball team because my scholarship for college was in football. And ironically, we went to the College World Series in 1967 and finished second to Arizona State with a team full of football players that really, you know, and unfortunately for our team, we had a lot of good players. I was the only one that signed off of that team and, you know, was able to play a few years in the majors.
Tom Pachorik, just stick around here as we'll get a check in news real fast and come back with the Wimperoo after 1:30. And a reminder, join us Saturday, September 7th, Sox take on Mike Trout and the Los Angeles Angels. That's a 6:10 first pitch. First 15,000 fans take home a White Sox replica home run chain. You can get your tickets today at whitesox.com. News is next, and more of the Wimperoo coming up on White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Hope you're having a great Labor Day weekend. Thank you to Pam Jones for the news. Thank you to Sam Martino for producing today with his Chicago Bulls neck brace slash airplane gadget, even though he's not on a plane. I like it. Perhaps makes you better at your job. You're more comfortable. Whatever you need to be successful in life, I support that. We're going to continue our conversation with the Wimperoo Tom Pachorik, which is sponsored by Mazda of Orland Park and ZoomZoomNation.com, where they're always trying to make your car shopping fun. So, Tom, as we bring you in back in here, it's just interesting. I don't know many people that make it to the major leagues, one, let alone have two of their brothers play in the big leagues as well. That is pretty incredible.
My brother Jim my brother Jim played 1 year with the Brewers,
right?
And my brother John is the record holder for the highest batting average in major league history. He went 3-for-3 in his only major league game. That was back in 1963 with the Houston Colt 45s. He had 3 hits, a couple walks, 3 runs scored, and 3 RBIs, and he never played another game because he had spinal surgery after that, a spinal fusion, and it didn't take real well, so he never played again. But it was ironic, but because in that game of rookies for Houston was Joe Morgan, Jimmy Wynn, Sonny Jackson, Rusty Staub, my brother. Wow. Was the star of that one game, and all these other guys I just mentioned had careers of like 15 plus years in the major leagues. So there was quite a bit of talent on that team, but unfortunately for my brother, he was left out because of the injury.
Wow, that's movie worthy right there, Tom Pachorik.
Yeah.
I mean, really.
Yeah.
I mean, that could be in some Field of Dreams thing. By the way, the White Sox playing at Field of Dreams next year.
How about it?
What did your parents do that got all you three of you so athletically successful?
Well, we had there was 5 boys and 3 girls in our family, and my dad was great. You know, he knew how tough it was when he was growing up, and he never insisted that we get jobs because he just worked in the factory on the in the car industry. He worked on the assembly line for 40 years, and he never demanded that. You know, he allowed us to play whatever sport was in season, which was great. Whether it be basketball, baseball, or football. And so, you know, it was either that, get a scholarship to go to college, or we were going to be on the assembly line too. So that was pretty good incentive to stay out of there, because I worked there for 1 summer, and I thought it was horrible. And so I said I was going to do anything, whatever it took, to try and get out of that life. And professional sports was the best avenue at that time.
I mean, that's good parenting right there. You want to work? Try this. That's not ain't that much fun, right?
Oh, and I've learned to hate work, Mark, as long as I've always said. I just said, you know, in baseball, it's been 1968 I signed. It's been 50 years, and I consider just having fun for 50 years. It's been amazing. You know, I really never had a real job during the time, because baseball is just, to me, has always been a fun thing. And if you're not having fun playing baseball, there's something wrong with you. You need to get in another profession.
No doubt. You made it to the most exclusive country club on the planet playing professional sports, and you were around some awesome people, Tom Pachorik. Can you tell me a Carlton Fisk story or a rookie Ozzie Guillen story?
Oh boy. Well, I wasn't with Ozzy very long, with the White Sox, but Pudge, he's not my most dynamic guy in the world. He was one of those guys that just plodded his way through the day, and he did it so efficiently. I never saw a guy with more concentration. You know, he'd go and lift weights. We were all drinking beer in the clubhouse after the game, and he's over there lifting weights. You know, things like that were always so impressive about Pudge, because he was always ready to play. And, you know, that certainly earned him one of the reasons why he got to the Hall of Fame. But we used to probably Kittle was the butt of most of the guys' jokes. So, you know, because Kitty's a little cocky. Yeah. And we used to get on him more than anybody else. And we liked to play that Karnak game with him. You know, somebody would yell out, catch 22, and everybody got catch 22, and they open up the imaginary envelope, and say, what would Ron Kittle do if you hit him 105 balls? So, you know, things like that. It was always a lot of pranksters on the team. And my recollection of the White Sox, and that was really what made it fun.
Kitty's on the show a bunch. I love talking to him. He's you know, he still has the same enthusiasm that he had back then. He was super I don't want to say emotional, but just really, really proud of Harold Baines getting into the Hall of Fame. I'm assuming you share those sentiments, Tom Pachorek.
Oh yeah, Harold Baines is just oh my gosh, you know, he reminds me a lot of Dale Murphy. You're just the nicest, kind, gentle human being you'd ever want to meet. And Harold, just you know, a great father, great family man. Now he's a grandfather, and great. And you know, I came in for that day that they had at Comiskey just so I could congratulate him because he was a great teammate. You know, he didn't say a whole lot, and amazingly, I'll tell you what, I was so proud of him. He actually brought tears to my eyes in his Cooperstown speech, especially about the when he brought in his dad at the end. I mean, it was really incredible and something that I was really proud of Harold. I said, man, I didn't know you could do that, Harold. And, you know, he kept it all inside for all those years. And it was fun. It was fun playing with him, fun doing his games, and fun at times even competing against him.
Did you know how much his dad meant to him when you were playing with him, or I'm assuming he kept that to himself?
Yeah, no, I did not. Yeah, I really did not. And that I think it was just a perfect ending to a great speech, and it was really wonderful. And certainly for folks, if they can look it up, if they haven't heard it, it is well worth hearing.
No doubt. The Whimperoo, Tom Pachorek, with us here on White Sox Weekly, doing games this weekend with Steve Stone. Does it feel weird walking in the booth and not seeing Hawk there?
A little bit. I had a ball with Hawk, you know, and I was so happy I got to introduce him last year at the ballpark in his last game. And, you know, I just can't believe that he's not in the Hall of Fame. That's my one big gripe, I guess, that I have right now, that Hawk has not been inducted into Cooperstown. You know, there's a lot of guys that haven't accomplished anything close to what he's done and what he's done in the broadcast field, especially that warrants his you know, being nominated. There's a lot of great announcers in the Hall of Fame, but certainly none better than Hawk.
You think it's a personal thing?
That's a great question. I don't know. I really don't know. I know there's a lot of people that that love Hawk, but on the other hand, I don't know the other people because I probably wouldn't have been associated with them. So I really don't know. But I think there's a lot of discrepancies in Hall of Fame voting anyway, because there's so many guys that it took a long time to get in and other guys that aren't even considered possible contenders to get into the Hall of Fame, even as players. So it's I don't know. It's a little muddy right now.
Does he ever talk about it? Does it bother him?
No. He's never once mentioned it to me.
Interesting.
Never once said.
Because, I mean, we... I had him on recently, and I honestly hadn't been thinking a whole lot about it, but then we started talking about Harold. I'm thinking to myself, why in the world are you not in the Hall of Fame? One of the most...
I mean, good grief.
I mean, one of the most...
been around since the early 60s as a player, and then, you know, he started broadcasting when, it was in the early 70s, right? With Boston and... and then coming to the Sox and then going to the Yankees and then back to the Sox. So, you know, and he's worked with some great people, too. You know, Don Drysdale, when he first came to Chicago, which was great. That was some kind of team. That was my first year with the Sox in 82, and him and Big D were just fantastic.
I mean, overall contribution to the game, player, broadcaster, general manager, whatever you want to, I mean, he's done it all. and unique. You know, there's only one of him. There's just like there's only one of Harry Carey.
Exactly.
You know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. There was only one Howard Cosell, only one Jack Buck.
Right.
You know, and yeah. Yeah, there is that unique quality and that makes him stand out among the, you know, the regular guys. You know, the guys that just, you know, do the games and, you know, you could lop them all into, you know, a big pot. But Hawk is very, very distinct.
Right.
And very knowledgeable in all his Hawkism.
Hawk's got to be in the Hall of Fame Wimper. He's just got to be in there. I'm going to start a movement. We're starting a movement. I don't know exactly where it's going to go, but we're going to do something. I would love to, in all seriousness, I'd love to see Hawk be honored for everything he's done for baseball and get to himself to Cooperstown as well. We'll continue with the Wimper a little bit more on Hawk and then a lot more on the team as well. That is coming up after a quick timeout. It is White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. White Sox Weekly, 720 WGN. Now let's continue with the Wimperoo. And Tom Pachorik, I can remember just like doing my own version of the Hawk Walk. I used to love watching him. He'd be on the golf course and he'd be doing that Hawk Walk and he'd act completely ridiculous after he would hit a putt or something and you'd see it on TV. So I had my own little version of that. I love the Hawk Walk.
I know. That's great. It was great.
Yeah.
And, you know, just so much fun thing. You know, all of his isms. You know, you could put it on the board, grab some bench, he gone. And,
or Pierce.
He gone, but he'll never be forgotten. I'll guarantee you that. Oh, I'll never be forgotten.
Or pure silence. I you know, like a White Sox Cubs game, Cubs get a big home run, nothing. I mean, like that. That to me is Hall of Fame worthy.
Well, you got that right. She's not real fond of the Cubs, that's for sure.
I mean,
or Wrigley Field.
Oh, right, and he owned it. It was beautiful. I remember just one grand slam. He didn't. He said literally nothing, and then just eventually, 4-0 Cubs.
There you go. He wore it on his sleeve, didn't he?
Yeah, and that's
and, you know, where his loyalty was, and you know.
Yep, and
what the heck? He's getting a paycheck from the White Sox. I mean, his loyalty was great.
Yeah, and it probably wasn't anything about who was going into his wallet too. It was also, you know, big time in his heart. But
absolutely.
Yeah. Hey, just a couple more here, Wimper. I know I'm keeping you a bunch here, but it's just so it's always enjoyable to talk to you. Do you like what's going on as far as the shifting in baseball? Would you if they made you commissioner, would you put something in, hey, you cannot cross over second base if you're on, you know, whatever, if you're on the left side or the right side?
Well, you know, I don't mind so much the shifting, but I don't know why these guys just don't hit it where nobody's standing. I mean, it doesn't appear to be that hard, you know, if everybody's playing on the right side of the infield, all you got to do, well, Matt Joyce did it last night for the Braves.
It was an easy base hit.
He got himself an easily bunt hit. And, you know, I've seen guys do it, but not enough. So if you want to keep hitting into that shift, I mean, that's pretty stupid. And, you know, it's costing guys tens and tens of points on their averages. You know, it would be interesting to see if they put a shift on, say, like a Tony Gwynn or a Rod Carew. I mean, they would just look out on the field and say, oh, there's nobody standing there. Boop, there's another hit. They'd probably hit 400.
You're actually,
you know,
you're teeing up an interesting part of it because, you know, baseball, it's all about the math right now. It's hard to string three singles together, so we'll give you that base hit because it's better than you trying to take it out of the ballpark. But for a player, you're raising all your stats, which means you're getting more money in your wallet, you know, which at the end of the day, you're there for the team, but you're also there for yourself as well. So it's got to be, you know, I mean, you got to put the oxygen mask on first at some point here.
Yeah, man, you know, more games are won by clutch singles than they are clutch home runs. You know, they just show the walk-off home runs and, you know, say, hey, how cool is that? You know, launch angle and all this other stuff. But the strikeouts, to me, is what's disturbing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and the way the ball's flying this year, to me, it's crazy that you know, if you make contact, hit a hard ground ball, especially if it's going faster than it used to or farther than it used to, wouldn't there be a premium on just making contact, maybe choking up a little bit on the bat and make it a little bit simpler? That's my big peeve about baseball today. The all-time strikeout record is just going to be slaughtered.
What's impressed you most about this particular season? A Giolito, a Moncada, Eloy, a lot of candidates here. Who would you go with?
Well, Giolito, he has really been great. I'll tell you what, you know, and I saw him pitch in that one afternoon game in Minnesota where he punched out 12, gave up 3 hits, and just had a very good offensive team looking very, very weak. And it was because of his stuff. And it was great. You know, he's got 14 wins on the season, and I think bigger and better things. As long as he stays healthy, I think I talked to Stoney a lot about him, and he's made some major adjustments in his delivery. And I think he's a lot more deceptive. He's using more of a short arm delivery, which is hiding the ball better. And when you're about 6'7", which he is, that lends to some pretty good stuff. And he's got a great fastball, throw it in 95, 96, but also a tremendous changeup that he just used. Basically, those two pitches with an occasional breaking ball against Minnesota, one of the dynamic offensive teams in baseball. And I'm looking forward to watching him pitch tomorrow against the Braves.
Yeah, no doubt. It's been a hell of a year. What are your thoughts on Eloy?
Eloy's got a chance to be really good. I think he's a big kid. You know, bigger guys are going to have a little bit tougher time because they're going to have a little bit longer swing to start with. Once he makes the necessary adjustments and gets real comfortable with Major League Baseball, I think he's going to be tremendous. Because right now, yesterday, he did a great job of getting on top of a real good high fastball from Max Fried and lined it to right field for a hit. And I think that was the pitch that was giving him trouble, that high fastball. Of course, it's giving a lot of guys trouble. But I think you hang a breaking ball to him, and he's going to hit it a long way, too. He's got tremendous power. And I think he's going to hit a lot higher. I think he's going to hit that 300 range once he's getting ready to go.
Yeah, that ball was shot to right field with authority.
Oh, yeah.
Should White Sox fans be a little worried about Dylan Cease?
Well, you know, I haven't seen enough of Dylan to really make an accurate, assessment. I know he's got great talent, but, certainly, take a page from Giolito and do whatever. That's what I would do. I'd follow Giolito around and find out, do whatever he does, because he had a bad year last year himself. And, I think it was, just like hitting, if you make the minor adjustments that is necessary, I think Dylan's going to be a real good pitcher.
Well, and there's something to be said for that, right? Having a bunch of young guys all around pushing each other. And, I mean, that's what the White Sox are going to have here with Cease and Giolito and Kopech coming.
Yeah.
And who knows? You're going to have... I'm not saying they're going to recreate the 90s Braves here, but there is a potential where you can have one guy trying to top another.
Yeah, that's very true. And they're going to have a bunch of power arms, too, you can't really say the Braves, had when, with Maddox and Glavine and Smoltz had a power arm, but they're more finesse guys. But I think if you could combine the two so you don't have to overwork and just bust it on every single pitch, these guys will be better pitchers, too. And I think that's what Giolito is doing right now. He's not throwing 95, 96 every pitch, but when he needs to get it later in the ballgame, he's got it. That's kind of like Verlander has made it possible for his greatness to be like that. And I think Scherzer is adapting that principle, too. So those are the guys that I would watch closely and see how they do it. So, you don't max out and you're done in 5 innings.
Tom Pachorek, great to talk to you. Great to hear you this weekend. White Sox fans always love it when you're on the broadcast. So, cheers to more fill-ins coming up down the line or whatever it is you want. And thanks so much for coming on White Sox Weekly. I love the conversation.
Oh, thanks, Mark. I really enjoyed it. And good luck to everybody there. my best to everybody in the great city of Chicago.
Everybody appreciates that. The great Wimperoo. Always good to hear Tom Pachorik, so I hope you enjoyed the conversation there. Coming up after 2 o'clock, we will be bringing on Michael Huff, Director of Youth Baseball and Fast Pitch for your Chicago White Sox, help you out with what's coming up in the wintertime, some opportunities for the youth of America, youth of Chicago, youth of the state, trying to move themselves forward in the off season, if you will, which doesn't necessarily exist as much as it did back in the day. Guys are, and girls, playing year round to stay as on the path as much as possible. So Michael Huff's coming up, Scott Merkin as well in the 2 o'clock hour. And a reminder, Family Sundays feature tickets as low as $5 in the upper level, $15 in the lower level. Parking is only $10. Plus you get special family focused activities located throughout the ballpark, including run the bases after the game. Family Sundays, proudly presented by Coca-Cola. Grab an ice-cold Coca-Cola and enjoy the game. Visit whitesox.com/Sundays to purchase your tickets today. Check of news coming up right in about 3 minutes, and then we'll have Michael Huff on board. 720 WGN.
WGN, the team's flagship radio station.
You're listening to White Sox Weekly on the home of the Sox, 720 WGN.
White Sox Weekly, indeed, 206 on a beautiful Sunday. Hope you're having a great Labor Day weekend. Mark Harmon with you. With you till 3:35. Actually, that's not true. I'll be with you through White Sox pregame, so right around 4 o'clock, taking up to White Sox baseball today. White Sox Weekly continuing until 3 o'clock today. Let's bring in the Director of Youth Baseball and Fast Pitch for your Chicago White Sox, Michael Huff, joining us now on 720 WGN. Good afternoon, Mr. Huff. Hang on a second there. Don't respond to that. Now, let's do that again. Good afternoon, Mr. Huff.
Good afternoon, Mr. Carmen. How are you today?
I am excellent. Always appreciate the opportunity to talk to you, sir. We're wrapping up the season here, Michael Huff, for you guys with at least summer camps, but the season never ends. Is that not correct?
Oh, my gosh. And as we've talked about in the past, not sure if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but baseball these days in Chicago is definitely a 12-month-a-year job. You were right. The summer ended up last week, and what a great year for us. Over 2,100 kids came through the camps, and we were able to bring them to the ballparks on a Friday or Saturday night to get to have a Q&A with the current player, stay to watch batting practice, got to see a lot of these kids and parents, a lot of early hitting, which was very fun for us. But kids had a chance to meet folks like James McCann, like Lucas Giolito, Tim Anderson, Yolmer Sanchez. So just this summer, I don't think could have gone any better for the kids that were in our camps and those that were able to come to a ball game this summer.
Yeah, just to paint a picture for that, because I would be in the dugout before the game when you guys would be having these talk with the kids, and Jason Benetti would MC it. You would be around, and either Lucas or Tim or whoever would sit down. What were some of the conversations, like some of the topics that were hit in those moments where it's probably not that easy to keep a kid's attention, even though there's a Major League Baseball player right in front of them?
Well, we had the kids write questions down and gave them. Like you said, Jason did a great job of emceeing. We always had either Joe McEwing, the bench coach, or Nick Capper, a third base coach, on the dugout as well. But almost everyone talked about favorite player growing up, favorite stadium to play in, why do you have the number you have. But what was interesting is that a lot of the kids asked, you know, what was the favorite sports growing up? Were they multi-sport athletes? Did they play baseball year-round? Were they travel players? None of the guys that were out there, and again, we have two all-stars and potentially a silver slugger in Tim Anderson that only played baseball growing up, talked about the importance of teamwork, talked about the importance of multi-sports, talked about the importance of family and friends. So besides some very insightful questions from some of these kids, and I'm sure mom and dad probably snuck in a question or two, we did have the off, you know, how far can you throw a microwave, or, you know, what does it feel like when a watermelon, you know, drops from 20 feet in the air? Have you ever dropped a watermelon off a building? So there were some fun questions, but there was also a lot of very thoughtful and insightful questions from the kids.
I actually like that watermelon question. Had anybody done it?
No. Everyone kind of laughed and giggled. Everyone, with the exception of Yolmer, talked about in growing up in school, science projects of learning about, you know, a feather versus a ping pong ball, you know, gravity. So all these guys were able to talk about the importance of going to school, something that we obviously at the Academy put a very high value on. But it was a lot of fun this summer. And like you said, it was a neat experience for these kids to sit around the home dugout to ask these questions of these players and coaches, and just to see the attention, like you said, for some 7, 6, 8-year-old kids, probably don't have the greatest attention spans when they're in class or with the family at dinner, but every one of these kids was on the edge of their seats for the 20, 30 minutes that we had this Q&A.
Yeah, some of us 45, 46-year-olds don't have a great attention span either. It's not easy paying attention that long, Michael Hoff.
No, very true, very true. But when those guys are talking, as you saw, it's pretty fun, and the parents, I think, get as much out of it as the kids do.
What questions specifically do you get most from parents? Does anything stand out?
Yeah, I would say the biggest question I get is that single sport, multi-sport. And you and I, growing up here on the north side of Chicago, I played sports all the way through high school, and almost every one of these guys that's in the major leagues played multiple sports. At the Academy, currently the White Sox youth baseball and fast pitch, but the former Bull Sox Academy, we would say to the kids, look, we actually have two logos on our jerseys, you know, let's besides just swinging a bat. And I would say the biggest question I get from parents is how much downtime. Is it okay to play multi-sports? What do we do when the coach that puts pressure on us to only play one sport year-round, you know, what's the right thing to do?
And it's
a simple answer of saying if you have any youth coach that's putting that type of pressure on you, you need to leave that organization. There are so many organizations out there and a handful that do it right. I know we do. We're very proud of the kids that we teach, both with our travel teams as well as the outside travel teams. But if you get that pressure as a parent that if your kid is going to go away on a family vacation over the summer and the coach isn't going to play you, then if not you, your wife needs to look at that and say, this guy has the wrong set of values right now for our 10-year-old kid to try to teach him how to play this game the right way.
That's a tough one, though, because this is the yep. number one team, and this is where the best players are, and my daughter or my son really wants to be on this team, and even if it seems ridiculous that I can't or the family can't go on vacation, on a normal family vacation, you know, maybe we should just prioritize the kid there. But you're saying the opposite. Like, look, don't be in scarcity about this. There's other options, and just go out and explore them if you think if the coach or the organization, whatever, is being ridiculous.
Exactly. And here's the thing: is that a lot of these organizations claim they are tied into the local high school coach. If you are a parent and that is happening to you, go to that high school coach and say, if my son or daughter plays for this organization rather than this organization, because this is the type of thing that's happening right now. Our daughter loves softball. Our son loves baseball. But we do, at the age of 10, want to be able to go on a family trip to see his grandmother in Florida. That high school coach, 99% of them, I know because we work with the high school coaches at Illinois all the time, will say yes. If they're playing in any of these three organizations, if they love the sport, take some time off, they're going to make the high school team if they have any type of skill set.
What do you tell a parent for a kid who's like, look, we have a family obligation here, but I know that you really, really, really want to play, and then the kid's like super upset because they have to miss a game because, you know, something that the family's got going on. There's a lot of dynamics there,
yeah.
Right?
And again, it's neat that if the kid puts the pressure on the parents to say, I love this sport and I want to keep doing it, I think as the parent, that's where you need to be the parent and say, you know what, son, this summer we're playing in 7 tournaments. If we only play in 6 this summer because we're going to your aunt's wedding, it's going to be okay. I've talked to some major league players that really can't remember the score of the games in the minor leagues, let alone major leagues, let alone in college. let alone in high school, let alone in Pony, let alone in Little League. So if you're worried about missing one tournament this year and the team might not win because you're not there, that's wonderful you care about your teammates. But there are so many things that are more important in life, your family being one of them, if not the most important. And being able to put it in a perspective that a 12-year-old, 10-year-old can understand, again, go back to the old axiom that even the greatest Hall of Famers play baseball into their 30s. My guess is you're going to live beyond 35. So from, call it 35 to 85, you're probably going to want to be doing other things. And guess who's always going to be there? It's going to be your family and your friends. So make sure that those folks come first.
White Sox Director of Youth Baseball and Fast Pitch Michael Huff with us here on 720 WGN. I love what you're teeing up here. It's all important stuff here. But for those, Larry, let's move it forward here. For those who are going to continue and want to at least be a part of baseball and or softball in the offseason, I know you guys have opportunities available, and which could be balanced, by the way, with playing basketball or anything else. But so what do you got? What do you guys got going on, Michael?
We do some fall programming, some hitting, pitching clubs, both for the boys and girls. But really what we're focused on right now is helping those teams and organizations with their training, off-season training, call it December through April. We, last year, even though we have 6-7 boys and girls travel teams out of the White Sox, elite out in the suburbs, we trained over 100 outside boys and girl travel teams. And so right now my hope is any parent out there who is looking to price out, looking to maybe change up some things, whether it's an 8-year-old or a 14-year-old travel team, gives us a call, because we love to bring people to our facility in Lisle, but our coaches also go out and train outside travel teams if they have a facility, i.e. the Park Ridge Warriors have a nice little space in Franklin Park, and we send our coaches out there and work with each team a couple times a month. And it's not just working with the kids that we're excited about when we go out there. It's that we have their coaches doing the drills with us. So we're explaining to their coaches, here's the drills that we're doing right now. These are the drills that we want you to work on the next 2 or 3 weeks when you're in your facility, so that when we come back, we can do the next step in terms of a progression on hitting or pitching or fielding. So whether it's inside our facilities or outside into one of your facilities, if you're a travel parent, boys or girls, please give us a call, because that's kind of what we're on the phone doing right now.
Is there a formula for how much is too much in that scenario? Like, you know, hey, we're learning this, and we're going to stay out here for 3 hours because you've got, you know, great energy and you're enjoying it. Or is it, you know, there's the other theory, like, just be out there as long as you are, like, really just dialed in, and it can be 45 minutes, and that's enough. You know, kids start to wander, but the rare kid might just be that ready to go for a longer period of time, and maybe that's not a bad thing.
No, again, ideally, you're going to work out, if you're not playing basketball, if you're not playing hockey, if you're not wrestling, ideally, it's a couple times a week, 2 or 3 times, where one could be very structured, and 2 or 3 are where we're hoping the kids and the parent coaches can take what we've given them and start to reinforce it. Because, as you know, Mark, this game is all about repetition. If you can't step into a hitting position, if you can't stride the right way, if you don't have your hands out and you're moving forward when you're fielding, eventually that's going to come up and haunt you and sort of bite you in the keister. So how do we get that repetition? It's coming 2 or 3 times a week. It's doing it in your basement or your garage. It's doing it at school, middle school or high school, away from the coaches. And it's 15, 20, 30 minutes, sometimes an hour. That's all you really need to get it done. And if you can do that, and it's 2 or 3 times a week, you're going to be so far ahead of the curve with everybody else when the season comes around in April. You'll be light years ahead of the other organizations and teams that you play.
I love it. Master those fundamentals. Yeah, I got one more for you. I love this conversation, Michael. If you know I do, we have it.
I do. I love it with you.
So I'll talk to parents who will be like, there's two sides, right? It's the parent that like thinks their kid is absolutely positively amazing, and in reality, they'll be lucky to play in high school. And then there's the other parent who wants to downplay their kid. And it almost feels like they're taking chips off the table. Well, you know, she's good, but she's not going to be like going to play in college, or she's certainly not going to be, you know, play for the Olympic team. And so, like, there's a balance in, like, where you, some parents, I feel like, are taking chips off the table, or some are putting too much on. I know you know where I'm going with this, but it's like, how do you find that balance? Because I all hear a parent talk about that. It's like, wait a second, don't downplay your kid. You don't know what your kid's capable of. And then the other side, it's like, don't put too much pressure on him either. It's not easy.
No. And that's again where my hope is more people give us a call, drop us an email than less, because you will be talking to people that have played in the major leagues like myself or Dan Passwood, Jim Medusi, folks that have reached the highest level in the fast pitch world. And hopefully we can work with those parents or those teams for the balance. It is such a fine line, and every kid is totally different. If they're enjoying it and having fun, I think that's the biggest thing that we try to impact the kids with, and the parents, making sure that's happening. And if it is, you let them keep going. And when the parent says, I'm not really sure, you know, my kid's a little small, I'm not sure how much he or she likes it, and you and I can see this incredible athleticism, that's where the Mike Huff stories come out, of saying, you know what, I was just like your kid, smallest one growing up, never played travel, never played all-stars, and guess what? It took me until my junior year in high school to finally start to grow. It took me 4 years of college to really learn how to play one sport, and I got to play 7 years in the major league. So, yeah, you're right. He's probably, or she's probably, not going to play in the major league, but you know what? Pretty athletic right now. Let's have him or her playing a couple different sports. Let's make sure it's still fun for her. And you know what? Just playing a couple tournaments right now would be a good thing. And for those that are the opposite, saying, well, I'm going to play in 16 tournaments this summer, it's like, you know what? Might be really nice to cut that in half and just have some fun with the family, maybe have some inner squads, maybe do something where the kids are relaxing and enjoying, because you and I know that's the kid that could be really good in eighth grade but is so burnt out, just can't do it anymore, or to your point, has maxed out when he or she is 11. And now, because they had some success playing in certain tournaments, maybe where they weren't really pushed, now the parent is just setting them up for disappointment and not letting them do a couple other sports, not letting them have some fun with their friends, and maybe not exploring and saying, you know what, it might not be baseball or softball is my sport. It might be this is what I'm really good at.
Yeah. Great stuff, Michael Huff, Director of Youth Baseball and Fast Pitch for your Chicago White Sox. How do people contact you?
It's simple, mhuff@shysox.com, or it's just 630-PLAY-BALL, and leave anyone out in the West Suburban Sports Complex a voice message email, whether it's Kathy Young, the Hall of Fame softball coach who oversees our fast pitch, Jim Medusi, Dan Pasqua on the elite side, Jerry Novak on the youth side. Some of us will get right back to you and hopefully be able to answer your questions and help set you up for the preseason and off-season training.
And the website for people who just want to check it out online?
It's just whitesox.com/play.
whitesox.com/play. mhuff@shysox.com if you want to send Mike an email. Michael Huff, thank you, my friend. Always good to talk to you, and looking forward to the month of September here. We will we'll catch up during the off-season, all right?
Definitely. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure. Michael Huff, director again of youth baseball and fast pitch. I think it's an important conversation. Everybody wants their kid to get the scholarship, and the White Sox are out here trying to help. So get involved if you'd like on that level, and they'll do their best to help your child along. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. Can head to the park for Dollar Hot Dogs every Wednesday. Home game this season. Take advantage of this unbeatable deal on Wednesday, September the 11th. As the Sox take on the Royals at 7:10 p.m., brought to you by Securian Financial. It can help you make every moment count. Find out more at Securian.com. For tickets, visit whitesox.com/dollardogs today. Just a shout out to John Jay, who I'm assuming probably will not be back with the club next year, although you never know. He was placed on the injured list with the strained right hip, which limit him at the start of the season. He didn't make his debut until June the 24th and got a little under 200 at-bats on the season at 267. with an on-base percentage of .311, slugging .315, 8 doubles. But John has just been a professional around baseball. He's played now for 6 teams and had an impact on the White Sox as far as just doing things the right way. And I would assume his career will continue, although you never know. I mean, getting into the mid-30s there with a pretty significant injury that limited his season, he'll probably have to go on a minor league deal next year if he wants to keep on playing and see if he can make a club in spring training. Who knows? Maybe he'll be with the White Sox. White Sox are going to try to be a playoff team next year. That's a veteran that can help you off the bench, left-handed bat, play some outfield. You never know what the future is for John Jay. And of course, he came here because he was part of the courtship, seemingly, for Manny Machado, who ended up in San Diego, which I think will benefit the White Sox long-term. Just my opinion. I think they'll be fine. Money available for other things, like pitching. Let's do a quick timeout. Scott Merkin's coming up after the 2:30 news, 720 WGN.
It's great to be back with WGN.
It's White Sox Weekly on the official radio station of the Chicago White Sox, 720 WGN.
Happy Labor Day weekend to you, Jerry Reinsdorf. Happy to have you, the chairman. 720 WGN, it is White Sox Weekly. Scott Merkin, one of my favorites, MLB.com, has covered the White Sox since the White Sox have been in existence. Well, joins us now on his Labor Day weekend. Merk, good to be with you as always. Thanks for taking time.
I get to go up against Justin Verlander's final out of his no-hitter here, huh?
That's interesting. I wasn't tracking that. Verlander's about to have a no-hitter? That's terrible on my part, I suppose.
He's one strike away, as a matter of fact.
No-hitters are just so, like, I don't know. They used to be exciting, Mark. Now it's like, you know, 10 a season. That's not really accurate at all, but they do happen more frequently.
I think they're still exciting because I think the thing that's changed is pitchers don't go as deep in the game, right? With the proliferation of bullpen usage, and I'm not talking about the Sox struggles recently starting wise, but you know, even good starters usually go out after 6 or 7, so you can get the setup guy in and the closer in, right? So I mean, it's pretty interesting. He's at, according to the bar, he's at 119 pitches right now. You don't see that all the time.
You don't, and you know, Ronaldo Lopez had one working a couple of starts ago. They're like, well, if
right.
will they continue to let him go out there? And he gave up a hit, but it didn't even seem like the White Sox would consider doing something like that. As far as Lopez's concerned, are you his last 3 out of 4 have not been great? You concerned about Ronaldo Lopez? You think this White Sox are Scott Merkin?
Yeah, you know, it was interesting that game that I think it was last Sunday, right? That I believe it was Sunday that he threw that game where he had 5 no hit innings, and then he got sick, and then Bummer came in, and the first thing that Bummer did was get a hit, and Bummer's been great this year, obviously, but Verlander just finished off his no hitter. By the way, I think is it his third career no hitter? He's pretty amazing, isn't he? Good lord!
Everyone thought he was done with Detroit, and like the Astros were maybe making a bad bet on him, and then it turned out to be like the greatest bet ever. So
I think it goes to show, you know, these guys. Well, not that we needed this to be reminded, but these guys are human. And I think you can look across town at Nick Castellanos. And, I mean, he was okay for Detroit. He killed the White Sox. Obviously, White Sox fans know that. But, I mean, just the production. I think he's had as many home runs in 116 at-bats or something like that with the Cubs as he did with 450 for the Tigers. And, hey, Tigers are in the early stage of the rebuild. This was expected. I'm not sure if it was, you know, 53 games under .500 expected. But, you know, it means something to go to a situation where you're winning again, right? And I'm sure that revitalized Verlander and, you know, he won a World Series, and they've been great since. And I'm sure, you know, any player that does that gets in that situation to kind of revitalize them a little bit. And maybe you get I'm not saying you aren't going hard before that, but you get an extra step up there.
Yeah.
But back to what you're saying with Lopez. Yeah, I mean, Lopez, the consistency has just been the issue all year. And I'm not so sure it's, you know, so much mechanics or, you know, stuff is just, you know, focus. I mean, it really is hard to figure because, you know, he was unbelievable his last 7 starts last year. I've quoted this stat almost as much as I've quoted how many days the White Sox were in first place in 2012. And, you know, he had a 1.38 ERA his last 7 starts this year. I don't care if he was going against Houston all 7 starts or against, you know, the last place teams in all 7 starts. 1.38 is pretty good at the major league level. That's not a luck situation. So the stuff is there. But, you know, here's the thing with the rebuild is you're giving these guys a chance. You know, Lopez is going to make 30 starts. Lucas Giolito made over 30 starts last year in what was a really bad year for him. But these guys are also going to show where they fit too, right? So Lopez is getting the opportunity to start, but there's nothing locked in. He has not been, you know, guaranteed a starting spot in 2020 or 2021, probably 2020, but 2021 when this team's got a better chance, you know, probably moving into that prime contention window. So you got to take advantage of the opportunity too, and look at, you know, what Lucas Giolito did. He refocused, and not refocused, but he said to himself, this is not who I am. I'm better than this. And did all he could to fix that in the offseason. And my goodness, he's been tremendous this year. You know, he's been one of the, he's gone from the leader in earned runs allowed and American League walks to, you know, probably one of the five guys being considered for AL Cy Young this year. So kudos to him. And Lopez has got to make that same adjustment. I get that he got some bad breaks last night, that, you know, there's a pass ball against Castillo, there Tyler Flowers' routine grounder hit the base, and that, you know, led to more trouble. But, you know, he also got six hits in two-thirds of an inning, so there's a little culpability on both sides.
Well, it's interesting when you think about the starters and what the White Sox are going to do in the offseason as far as going into free agency and maybe targeting a guy like Gerrit Cole is going to be targeted by, I don't know, two-thirds of baseball, and also perhaps spending some money on extending some of their own players. And, you know,
right.
Would they consider extending any of their young pitchers? Is Lucas Giolito a candidate for that after the year he had? I would assume not, but maybe. What do you think, Mark?
Well, I wrote about this earlier in the year that, you know, they tried with Dylan Cease in spring training, and that didn't really, you know, materialize into anything. So I think anything is open. Of course, it's got to be, you know, equal on both sides. Both the player and the team have got to want that extension. You know, some guys would prefer to bet on themselves and keep going through, you know, arbitration eventually and then get to free agency and take a chance. Some guys, I know, you know, Chris Sale, man, we asked him every year, and at least I did, every offseason, a new $200 million contract came along, and he had that great team-friendly deal, and he was arguably, you know, one of the top, I guess, you know, probably with Kershaw and Verlander, the top three Scherzer in there. Let's say the top in the team picture for best starters in baseball. And he never complained. You know, he said, I knew what I was signing. People let me know what was going on. That's the deal I took. That's the deal I wanted. I'm perfectly happy with it. So you have to have both sides. You know, the Sox offering a fair deal, which, as an example, they did with Jimenez. And the side wants that, which Jimenez did. So, you know, it'll be interesting. It'll be interesting. And you know, you mentioned Gerrit Cole. And I know he's kind of the hot-button guy, Anthony Rendon with the Nationals, another guy who's going to be a free agent. And obviously there are going to be myriad teams looking at these guys. But I don't think you need, and I don't want to demean anyone in the picture. I hope I explained this right. I don't think you need to get that number one guy in each category to have a successful offseason. Look at what the Minnesota Twins have done. You know, I mean, they've gotten really good veteran players who were accomplished and still doing great, but probably weren't the number one guy in free agency at their specific position. But these guys have won before, and these guys have helped the younger players, and they've produced. Marwin Gonzalez, Nelson Cruz, Chris Cron. You know, just a great job by the Twins in the offseason to put themselves, you know, almost certainly in the postseason in 2019.
Milwaukee did the same thing last year. Nobody, for whatever reason, wanted to pay big for Lorenzo Cain. He was huge for
right.
them. You know, and then they made an unbelievable deal betting on a guy like Christian Yelich. Gave up a lot to get him, but he reached heights that he had never reached in Miami before. I mean, that's the type of move where a GM really, really shows that he's ahead of the curve, and I'm sure Rick Hahn's going to try to do something along those lines. Well, I don't know if they'd be willing to give up young talent, and they're not quite there yet, but that level of trade is coming. If it's not this offseason, it's certainly coming in the next two, you would think, where some of the young talent might go elsewhere for a proven guy who's hopefully young and is cost-controlled and makes a ton of sense for the White Sox. I mean, that makes sense, does it not, Merrick?
Yeah, I think, you know, the Sox probably, well, I know, you know, they looked a little bit at Yelich themselves, but they were, you know, in the middle of they're still in the rebuild, but in the nascency of the rebuild there. And yeah, I think, you know, the rebuild is great because you're building depth. You're not just building talent at the front with Tim Anderson and Luis Robert and Eloy Jimenez and Michael Kopech and Lucas Giolito, but you're building depth too. You're going to have guys who can come in behind them. Whatever their numbers are at the minor leagues, you have some talent who can come in there. Or, as Kenny Williams talked about in the past, and as, you know, many farm directors and draft directors had talked about, Nick Hostetler talked about, Doug Lama before him, these guys are to either help the team, you know, by calling them up and fitting them in position, or help the team by moving them for someone who can help the team. So, you know, I think it's going to be real interesting to see. But, you know, at some point, and Rick Hahn and Kenny Williams are well aware of this, you got to go off the cover of Baseball America and from the number one or two or three spot in MLB pipeline and win, right? I mean, that's the ultimate goal. I mean, I was debating this with someone the other day who's very knowledgeable, a sports person too. And, you know, would you rather have 1 year of a winner and then maybe like 3 or 4 or 5 down years, or like 5 or 6 competitive years with no titles? And I think you take the title every time, right? I mean, ultimately the goal is win the World Series. And the Sox are aware of this, and Rick has talked about this ad nauseum, that when the time is right, they're going to make the moves to finish it. And I think it's, you know, getting within a year, if not sooner. You never know with how divisions break up. You know, who knew Minnesota was going to be dominant this year going into the year? Who knew Cleveland back in May? I know I was probably a little harsh on them, but even being harsh on them, who knew they would be 20 games over this late in the season? So you never know year to year. But I think the Sox are ready, and they know when they have to make the move and know who they have to go after.
Let's rewind back a little bit here, just current state. And do you think the White Sox are concerned with Dylan Cease right now? I mean, it's 10 games in. It'd be ridiculous to not think that he's going to have his ups and downs, and there's been more downs, you know, at the start of his career, but that's nothing new for a young pitcher. But then, you know, he is getting hit harder than some thought that he would. Where do you think they're at with Dylan?
I think they're fine with Dylan. I think, you know, it's a work in progress for a young guy who's got a ton of talent. I mean, Dylan Cease gave up, what, 8 runs and 10 hits in just over 2 innings against Minnesota, which is not a rarity against that lineup. But he also hit 100 miles an hour on his fastball and had 10 swinging strikes. So, I mean, the stuff is there. There's absolutely stuff there. And really, yeah, I mean, you want him to have a good year. You want him to have a good finish in September. And I assume he's pitching out through September here. They've done a great job, even starting in spring training, monitor his innings, you know, so he doesn't go. So it's not a huge increase over the 124 I think he threw last year as a career high. But, you know, you'd like him to finish strong just to have kind of that confidence level. But I think he's confident himself one way or the other. And I really do believe, and this may sound like a cop-out, but I really do believe his numbers are kind of meaningless this year. You know, the team is not going to the playoffs. They're not going to finish 500. So it's a great experience. I mean, and with that in mind, that's why I've been pushing for a while, not to really the Sox check with me what I think, but that Luis Robert and a guy like Nick Madrigal probably should have been up since the start of August, in my mind. This is in my mind. And let them get going. Let them play for 2 months. The only thing you really do is take them out of the rookie of the year picture for next year and get them ready for next year. You know, look at Jimenez. Now, Jimenez has been hurt by a couple injuries, and 3 injuries, actually, in time on the bereavement list. But he looks like he's just starting to get on a roll now, get his, you know, kind of his feel back with the time down. But, you know, he hasn't had probably the year that he thought he would, because he considered himself a hitter more than a power hitter. So guys like Cease, guys like Jimenez, Giolito last year, it's all, you know, you'd like it, as Rick has said this a few times too, you'd like them all to hit the ground running and do what Bo Bichette has done over in Toronto or what Tatis did with San Diego. But it doesn't always happen that way. So that's why, you know, I think if you're 2 years in and you're seeing a 6 ERA and, you know, home run at every start, then you probably have a little pause for concern. But I think Dylan Cease is learning every start. He's learning in between every start. And he's going to be a focal point of that rotation come 2020 and beyond.
Interesting that you think that he's going to pitch to the end of the year. I always thought that at some point in September they would shut him down. But it is true they've spaced it out. And he hasn't, and well, with some of his outings right now, he's you know, he threw 2 innings the other day, threw you know, what was less than 60 pitches. So there's that part of it too. But so you think he's actually going to the end of the year?
Yeah, I haven't asked much about that lately, but I, you know, I remember they worked on this so diligently. Diligently, they aren't doing everything else diligently, but they, you know, they mapped this out so meticulously that they didn't even start him until later into spring training.
Yep.
You know, there were a few weeks into spring training where he just was throwing sides and then was just throwing an inning or two at a time. So they've really worked this out to the fact, you know, I mean, you want him to have an innings bump because you want him to kind of move towards that 200 mark, which is kind of the magical mark for starters. Now, again, maybe he makes 3 or 4 good starts. They certainly have guys up now with Manny Benuelos and Santiago and Ross Detweiler and even Carson Fulmer down there. Maybe he makes 3 or 4 good starts, and maybe they're, you know, 12, 13 games under, and they say, okay, that's good. We're, you know, they could do that. I've seen that happen. We've seen it happen before. But, you know, from what I've seen so far, I think he's going to go through September.
Scott Merkin, MLB.com, with us for a couple more seconds here on the 720 WGN. Do you think Yoan Moncada is locked into third base? Because, you know,
I mean, I think barring something like of
Anthony Rendon
significance, he is the third baseman for the long term future. I asked Ricky that the other day, and Ricky looked at me like I was speaking Hebrew, basically. You know, I mean, he was like, you know, is that a trick question? Because I think they're so impressed, rightfully so, by what he's done this year defensively and offensively that he's their guy there. You know, so I think barring something just, you know, off the Richter scale and, you know, move wise, he is the third baseman going forward for the Chicago White Sox.
I mean, I think I'm asking the question the same reason why you're asking it, because if Manny Machado had said yes, then he would have been the second baseman. And Rendon is out there, and it's like, is he? I'm sure that there's some him playing third base that helped him offensively this year, but then there's also the part of like, I think that guy was going to figure it out whether he's playing second, third, or right field. You know, there's just too much talent there that he wasn't going to hit.
So it's
just interesting that they have some flexibility there, but he's also been phenomenal.
Well, they do, but remember, you know, Nick Madrigal's on his way too at
right.
second base.
Yep.
So you're probably talking, this is sure hypothetical, you know, I mean. But if that were to happen, if they were to ink Rendon, then you're probably talking an outfield move, right? I mean, assuming they don't move Madrigal and some other, you know, big deal. But again, this is all just completely 100% speculative. But I would think grounded in reality as we sit here right now with not speculating any moves they could or couldn't make, it's, you know, Moncada, Anderson, Madrigal, and I would be shocked if it's not Jose Abreu at first base, at least for 2020 and probably 2021.
How many years do you think he gets?
I mean, it's kind of unfair to speculate because I'm not, you know, I would guess that I don't think, you know, he has his sights on 10 more years of baseball. This is a guy who played a long time in Cuba too, you know, so I think he's got a young family. He's dedicated. He talks about them almost every interview, you know, his mom and dad and his kids and his wife and everything else. I would guess 2 years and an option would probably make sense. And I think it's, you know, as far as I can tell from what he has said, I don't think it's going to be a tough negotiation, but, you know, the Sox have to, you know, decide that that's what they want. And I would think, you know, almost certainly he's going to be back. He's such, number one, he's still a very solid middle of the order presence. I think, you know, bordering on, you know, elite middle of the order presence in terms of driving and runs and, you know, extra base power and that kind of thing. And that's his focus more than getting on base and walks and that kind of thing. Although I think his average is back up around 280 again. And, you know, he is valuable to that clubhouse. You know, you see him interact with Moncada and Jimenez and Robert when he gets there. So I think he's, you know, the Twins have talked about, again, I'm using them because they've played so well this year and it's such a great season, but, you know, the influence that some of these guys, these older guys who have been through World Series and playoff races like Marwin Gonzalez, like Nelson Cruz, have had on the younger guys. And you have a guy like Abreu who really wants to be there. He's really killed all his bargaining power as many times as he said that he would sign himself back if the Sox didn't sign him. So I think he's still valuable. And I think, you know, you got to work it out over time to figure out what he is worth and how many years you want to commit to him and what you feel like his, I don't want to say depreciation, but how he's going to be each year. So that's for the Sox to figure out. But I think he's still a valuable piece of that team.
Scott Merkin, good to be with you, as always. I hope you're enjoying your Labor Day weekend. I know you're not in Atlanta, but you're always paying attention, Merk. So there's
I am, but off to Cleveland tomorrow to celebrate Labor Day in Cleveland for a big four-game set and with the Wahoos. I'm glad we could share the last out of the Justin Verlander no-hitter together.
You were correct, by the way. It is his third no-hitter. He gave up one walk in his outing today, 120 pitches. So you were spot on for that, Merk. All over
there
it.
There you go.
And I love the fact that you're retweeting tennis videos. I was just at the U.S. Open. Huge fan of Coco.
You were there.
That's
got to be a cool experience. I know Billy Russo, who is the tremendous interpreter for the White Sox, and went to it last year when it was like 100 degrees. I can't even imagine what that was like. But that's like, I'm not a huge tennis watcher on TV, but the U.S. Open is something I try to watch every year. And that was just an amazing moment between those two. Just a lot of class on both sides from those young ladies.
No question. Naomi Osaka and Coco Gauff. I love that you put it out there. Okay, now I can talk tennis with Billy Russo. That was helpful, too. So
there you go.
All right. Merk,
I'm
be well.
Here. I'm here to help.
I appreciate it. Be well, Merk. Appreciate you.
Okay, Mark. You too. Take care.
Scott Merk and MLB.com. Quick timeout, 720 WGN.